So it was the last thing I told you about on yesterday's O-line tiers episode of the Fantasy Feast, and it's the first time thing I'm telling you about today. Pro Football Focus. There's a reason. I think all 32 teams now subscribe to Pro Football Focus in some way, shape, or form. Think about that. Every NFL team. So if every NFL team is subscribing to Pro Football Focus, why aren't you guys? You can use the promo code POD20 to save 20% and get full access to the new premium stats database, Greenline Game Picks. It's PFF Elite. Gives you all the performance data you need to make winning picks all season long. Join PFF Fantasy today and prepare to win. Sign up at profootballfocus.com. Use promo code POD20 to save 20% on all subscription plans.
It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eating Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is the Fantasy Feast Eating Podcast. He is Evan Silva, at Evan Silva on Twitter. I'm at Ross Tucker, NFL, the former journeyman offensive lineman. He's the Roto World superstar. It's the show that's so nice. We do it twice, and I know why a lot of you are here. You want to know if you got in the league. Well, here we go. Without further ado, here are the final three spots in the season-long league. Kyle Odom. He sent me sponsor confirmations for Bet Online, Squad QL. He rated and reviewed like every show we have, even money and everything. Ross Tucker Football Podcast, College Draft, Business of Sports. Dan LaMagna did the same. He signed up for Pro Football Focus, for FFE, Fantasy Football Evolution, rated and reviewed the show as well. And Jarrett Sparks sent me both SeatGeek and Dollar Shave Club confirmation. So the dudes that clearly go above and beyond are the dudes that win a lot of these contests. And we'll have a different contest starting next week that I know a lot of you will be very, very excited about. Maybe I'll even tell you a little bit later in the show what that contest entails. Right now, I want to tell you what I'm so excited about in terms of all the emails I've been getting from you guys about SeatGeek. I mean, all kinds of emails. You guys have been using the crap out of SeatGeek the last couple weeks to get tickets for both the preseason and the regular season. It's been awesome. I actually like when you guys get the SeatGeek app and when you use the code Tucker, or in this case, since we're on the Fantasy Feast, use the code Feast to get the $20 off, because I love seeing the deals that you get. Like, I'm amazed at the prices that you guys get on some of these different tickets that you get. In case some of you haven't heard before, it's your first podcast, definitely go back and listen to the rest of the tiers that Evan and I did, including my O-line one yesterday. But also, check out the fact that you can get unbelievable tickets like you can at SeatGeek. It's like Kayak. You guys use Kayak to pick your flights, you know, kind of aggregates Delta and United and American Airlines and Southwest, whatever. It aggregates them and gives you the best pricing available. Well, that's what SeatGeek does for tickets. So download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code FEAST today. That's promo code FEAST for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life is an event. We have the tickets. And we have time for Evan to give us your preseason fallers and risers. This is a very, very important podcast. Next meal.
Next meal.
All right, Evan, let's get into it, my friend. Risers first. Christian McCaffrey, he's looked awesome in the preseason, hasn't he?
Absolutely. And, you know, I do like to watch players' performance in
the preseason. I think that it's most telling probably for the offensive line. And people can go back and listen to our offensive line show. You did an awesome job breaking down all the offensive line tiers. And, you know, that is an area on the football field where I think that performance can matter. What matters to me most, though, for the skill position players is their usage. Christian McCaffrey, as a rookie, played 70% of the Panthers' offensive snaps. So far this preseason, he has been on the field for 90% of the Panthers' first-team snaps. The Panthers are using him at the goal line, running in between the tackles. They're using him like he was used at Stanford. Last year, he was like a scat back, you know, averaging 12.3 touches per game. He is going to be an every-down back this year. We can try to debate and forecast how that's going to go. Oh, well, you know, maybe he won't be effective in that role. Doesn't matter. What matters is that he's going to be getting the opportunity and a significant spike in volume. C.J. Anderson, who they signed during the offseason to a very cheap contract, 1 year, $1.75 million, he's been put into a competition with Cameron Artis Payne. There were times this preseason where C.J. Anderson was coming into the game behind Cameron Artis Payne. I do think that C.J. Anderson will make the team. I don't think that he's going to have a very big role, and I don't think that they're going to use him at the goal line in that Jonathan Stewart role as I think, you know, initially we should have expected, but we've learned more, and we've been able to change our view on this backfield. Now, another thing that we talked about on the offensive line show was the injuries on the offensive line for Carolina. I do not think that they're going to be an offensive line and a running game that is able to impose its will on opponents. I do not think that Christian McCaffrey is necessarily going to have, you know, a very high yards per carry average. I think that if he hovers in that four range, he was at 3.7 last year, I think that that will be good. I think that their problems on the offensive line actually could help him from a passing game standpoint, because I think that if they, you know, get the ball out of Cam's hands quickly, and you know, their running back, Christian McCaffrey certainly can be the beneficiary of that. Last year, he led all running backs in targets. It's going to be hard for him to improve on 116 targets. Let's be realistic. But I think that if he hovers in that 100 target range, and I think he can actually definitely get over 100 again. But and then he adds, you know, a big chunk of carries like he appears to be headed for, and he gets those goal line carries, his upside can go through the roof. He's got a great floor and ceiling, and that's what I'm looking for from my fantasy picks. Christian McCaffrey over the course of the preseason went from a fringe second to third round pick to a first round pick, and I think that that's deserved.
Royce Freeman and Emmanuel Sanders, a pair of Broncos on your risers list.
Yeah, Royce Freeman this preseason, he has looked like a man among boys. And this is a situation where we're looking at performance, but he's in a camp battle. And he has outplayed Devontae Freeman. And the Broncos beat writers at this point expect Royce Freeman to open the season. Maybe he won't be in on the first snap of the game, but they expect him to be the lead back in Denver. And I think that he's earned that big tackle-breaking workhorse, 6 foot, 230 pounds, almost plays bigger than that, I think. I mean, there are times when he's just looks like one of the biggest dude on the field. He scored a touchdown in each of the Broncos' first three preseason games. He reminds me of Sean Green in his prime. And now people will look back on this and say, you know, oh, Sean Green, he stunk. And, I mean, I get it. But Sean Green had some big years. He had 2 years of over 1,200 yards from scrimmage. I think that Royce Freeman has big touchdown upside. Sean Green had some pretty good touchdown years in there. Sean Green, like, struggled with his weight at times and, you know, maybe didn't ever quite reach his potential. But I think that Royce Freeman can maybe even be a rich man's version of that and be a very productive player in Denver. Again, I think that it is worth noting that the usage hasn't totally cooperated yet. Devontae Freeman and Royce Freeman essentially split first-team reps right down the middle. during the preseason. Even Philip Lindsay, the undrafted rookie, he mixed in for some first team snaps. So it's definitely not a lock, and it's not to the point where I want to put, you know, Royce Freeman in my second or third round. But I do think that he's worth a fantasy pick around that fourth, fifth round turn. And at the beginning of the preseason, he was like a seventh to eighth rounder. So he's been a significant riser. And I think that he has a chance to get 250 plus carries and 25 plus catches, and maybe even push for 300 touches overall on a team that really should be featuring the running game to complement what should be a good defense this season. And then you mentioned Emmanuel Sanders. Last year, he only played 27% of his snaps at slot receiver. So far in the preseason, he's played 64% of his snaps in the slot. He's going to be a slot receiver with Case Keenum because Cortland Sutton and Demaryius Thomas are the Broncos' perimeter receivers. Cortland Sutton has locked up a job on the outside in their three receiver sets. They don't have a great situation at tight end, so I think that they'll be leaning heavily on those three wideouts, in addition to Deshaun Hamilton, who could also see some playing time. So far in the preseason, Emmanuel Sanders has looked every bit like Case Keenum's number one receiver, heavily out-targeting Demaryius Thomas. You go back and look at Case Keenum's history, loves the slot receiver, particularly last year, Adam Thielen, when he lined up in the slot, he had the highest target rate in the entire NFL among players who saw at least 50 slot targets. So Adam, and I think that Emmanuel Sanders can be even a more explosive version of Adam Thielen in the slot for the Broncos. I think that this is the year that Emmanuel Sanders overtakes Demaryius Thomas as the Broncos' number one, gets more targets than him, gets more yards than him. And I think that the pendulum switches this year. Demaryius Thomas even has been the subject of some trade rumors. Hey, you know, and who was it? Mike Florio, I think, speculated that maybe he could be sent to the Patriots. I'm not sure that that'll happen necessarily, but the Broncos love their young receivers, and I think that Emmanuel is their new number one. And so I do think that they would listen if teams showed interest in Demaryius leading up to final cuts.
You also have Jordan Howard and Jamal Williams, a pair of running backs in the NFC North on your risers list. Let's start with Howard. Why is he rising this preseason?
Well, we talked about this offseason, and this was obviously prior to the preseason, but just the change in offensive style is going to benefit Jordan Howard. Last year, the Broncos or the Bears played only 50% of their snaps in shotgun. And Matt Nagy's Chiefs last year played 76% of their snaps in shotgun. Jordan Howard has averaged 6.5 yards per carry on shotgun runs, ran out of the shotgun a ton at Indiana. But he has averaged only 4 yards per carry from under center. So that increase in shotgun snaps, I think, is going to benefit Jordan Howard. But really what's most important and the biggest takeaway from the preseason is that Matt Nagy and the Bears coaching staff is giving Jordan Howard a clean slate. This guy led the NFL in drop passes among running backs over the last two seasons, 14 drops. You know, I think that drops can be a little bit overrated as a negative at the wide receiver position, at the tight end position. You can't have your running back dropping passes. I mean, those are, you know, those plays generally don't, you know, have the potential to be like 25-yard explosive gains when you're throwing to your running back. You know, a good running back average is like 8.5-9 yards per reception. So you're not getting a lot of upside on those plays, and you certainly cannot have the floor to where that is an incomplete pass, you know, because your friggin' running back can't catch the ball. And Jordan Howard has struggled with that. In each of his first two seasons, he spent the entire summer and spring catching 200, 300 balls after practice. And Matt Nagy's like, look, we're going to play you on third down this year. You know, we are going to use you in the passing game. So just giving him the opportunity to do that, I think, is really, really bodes well. And it bodes poorly for Tarik Cohen, who did not see very much time with the first team offense this preseason. And I'm a little concerned about Tarik Cohen. What is his role going to be in this offense? I think he's just going to be a situational kind of package player. And I think he's going to return kickoffs and punts. But I think that Jordan Howard has been a riser and a guy that I've been drafting very, very aggressively in the second round. In addition to getting another shot to play in the passing game, he has very high touchdown upside on the Bears. And then you mentioned Jamal Williams. Aaron Jones struggled with a hamstring injury all training camp. You know, Aaron Jones just has not shown reliability in really any facet of his game or off the field. You know, he got busted for marijuana last year. He's going to end up opening the season on a 2-game suspension. He battled recurring MCL injuries last year. And then he suffered this hamstring injury that cost him multiple weeks of training camp. And he struggles in pass protection. And that's one of Jamal Williams' strengths. So, look, do I think that Aaron Jones is, you know, has more big play ability than Jamal Williams? Absolutely. But we also need to be able to put ourselves into the minds of the coaches, because we're trying to figure out who's going to play. And Jamal Williams is going to play. And the beat writers have indicated that they think he's going to open the season as like an every down back. And Ty Montgomery got hurt. Ty Montgomery is constantly hurt. He got hurt in the third preseason game, injured his foot. We still see, and you had a pretty high grade on the Packers offensive line, which I like to see. Let's remember that last year in the second half of the season, Jamal Williams averaged over 20 touches per game and was the RB8 in the second half of the year overall. So, I mean, this guy has shown that he can pass protect. This guy has shown that, you know, he can make the most of his opportunities. This guy has shown that, you know, they can put the ball in his belly a lot of times and he can handle it from a health standpoint. And he's still going in the sixth round and later in fantasy drafts. I think that right now he's one of the biggest values in fantasy football.
Couple more running backs, actually several running backs. We'll start with Carlos Hyde in Cleveland.
Yeah, he soundly beat out Nick Chubb for the Browns starting job. It was like it wasn't even a competition between those guys. Carlos Hyde crushed it in the preseason. I mean, 17 carries for 108 and a touchdown. You could watch him play. He looked excellent. And the Browns offensive line, who you gave a pretty high grade to as well, I think they were one of your top 12 or top 13 units. They didn't even have Kevin Zeitler in the preseason. He was a little banged up. He's going to be fined for week one. They were just being cautious with him, but they were opening some massive holes. And you remember how we've talked about how the impact of a dual threat quarterback, it can have a very positive influence on a run game as a unit. And the way that you play with Tyrod Taylor is you don't run a high volume passing game. I mean, you use his athleticism to your benefit from a running game standpoint. And the Bills did that. I mean, they were 32nd, 31st, and 31st in the NFL in pass attempts in his three seasons as a starter. And the Browns need to do the exact same thing. And they certainly sound committed to Tyrod Taylor. I mean, in my opinion, you know, Baker Mayfield should be getting some first-team reps, but my opinion doesn't matter. You know, we're trying to make forecasts here, and it's very, very clear that they want to force the issue with Tyrod Taylor, and he is going to be their starter. They did invest, you know, a top 65 pick in him, and they're paying him $16 million this year. So they are incentivized to play him. And I also like the way that the Browns open the season in terms of their schedule. Carlos Hyde in week one, they're at home against Pittsburgh. The Browns played the Steelers tough twice last year. I believe they lost 19-17 to them in week one. And then at the end, I mean, they lost by what, one score on a Corey Coleman last minute drop. So they played them tough twice last year. The Steelers tend to come out flat quite a bit when they're on the road, and the Browns will be catching them in Cleveland in week one. And the Steelers also really struggled in run defense after losing Ryan Shazier last year. So Carlos Hyde is going to be a rock-solid RB2 play in that week one game against the Steelers. Week two, they go to New Orleans. Now, this is a game that could potentially get out of hand from a game script standpoint if the Saints just come out lighting them up. But the Saints' strength as a defense is not at defending the run. So I think that Carlos Hyde, he'll be a riskier play that week, but still viable. And then week three at home against the Jets, that should be a very competitive game, and Carlos Hyde could certainly have a big game there. And then they are at Oakland, and the Raiders' defense looks like it could really be trash, especially if they don't have Khalil Mack at that point. So I like the way that everything really here sets up for Carlos Hyde. Don't expect him to catch a lot of passes, but he beat out Nick Chubb soundly. They've got a good offensive line. They should have one of the best running games in the NFL this year. They really should. And I like the way that the early season schedule sets up for him.
Keeping it moving. I'm loving this, by the way. This is so, so important. How about James White with the Patriots? You kind of forget about James White.
I know, and I think he might have a breakout year this year. I really do. Sony Michel was fumbling, then got hurt, and he did recently return to practice, but they're still babying him. You know, this is the kind of situation where I think that Sony Michel, we might not hear from him for a while. I mean, I don't think that the Patriots are going to push the envelope with Sony Michel. Bill Belichick does not seem like the type to force the issue with a rookie running back like this, who they can't even necessarily trust. Not seeing him practice like for essentially all of training camp, showing poor ball security early in camp and at the college level. Rex Burkhead missed a bunch of practice time as well. The Dr. Chow thinks he's going to be okay. And there was a report from The Athletic's Jeff Howe that Rex Burkhead, they really just put him in bubble wrap, and then he's going to be fine for the season. But still, you know, it's no guarantee. He is dealing with a knee injury, and that's always scary for a running back. You know, he could easily, even if he's ready for week one, he could aggravate the injury. James White still goes way behind these guys in fantasy drafts. I see him go behind Sony Michel. He goes five or six rounds behind Rex Burkhead. And if you look at what has happened the last 2 years in the Patriots backfield, which people always want to avoid because they make fear-based decisions, not because they're trying to finish first. And our goal is to finish first. They avoid the Patriots running backs, and they don't understand that the risk is already baked in to their ADP. And what happened the last 2 years is the cheapest guy in the backfield wound up being a league winner. LeGarrette Blount in the 11th round led the NFL in rushing touchdowns in 2016. Last season, no one wanted to even take Deion Lewis, and he was like a 14th round fantasy pick. And he and Todd Gurley were the two biggest league winners among running backs down the stretch last season. And James White right now is the cheapest running back in that backfield out of those big three. So he's been a guy that I've started to hammer in the 9th and 10th rounds of these late best ball drafts where we have a lot of information and we should have an edge on our opponents. James White, one of my favorite fantasy picks right now. Obviously, skews a little bit toward PPR leagues. But I mean, I think that we could see him open the season with, 14 to 17 touches per game and, catching a lot of balls for sure.
Let's get to Bilal Powell, another running back that you kind of forget about for whatever reason. I swear there's certain guys that you almost forget they're on teams. I don't know why, but it's like they just don't get enough love.
Well, the first thing that went right for Bilal Powell is that Elijah McGuire fractured his foot. The Jets were hoping to give Elijah McGuire a very big role. Their running backs coach even compared, I think it's Stump Mitchell, even compared Elijah McGuire to LaDainian Tomlinson, which, is obvious hyperbole, but still, shows that the Jets were very, very high on Elijah McGuire, but he remains out indefinitely. Bilal Powell ran ahead of Isaiah Crowell all preseason. Every single preseason game, it was Bilal Powell in the lead. Yet, Isaiah Crowell is still going four rounds ahead of Bilal Powell. That doesn't make sense. Bilal Powell is skilled in the passing game. He's better in the passing game than Isaiah Crowell. He's also got an extra year of experience in this system under Jeremy Bates. Jeremy Bates was not the OC last year. John Morton was, but the word among the Jets like organization is that Jeremy Bates actually had more of his fingerprints on last year's offense, and that's why they were so quick to move on from John Morton. And John Morton hasn't even resurfaced. I don't even think he's gotten another job in the NFL. So this has been Jeremy Bates' second year running the offense, and he's seen what Bilal Powell can do. And Bilal Powell had a pretty darn good year last year. He finished as the RB26 overall. And the year before that, he was the RB15 overall in fantasy. And I think that this offense is underrated. I really like what we've seen from Sam Darnold. They have speed to stretch the field on the perimeter with Robbie Anderson and Terrell Pryor. I'm big on Quincy Enunwa as like a volume guy in the middle of the field, a high percentage volume guy in the middle of the field. And I think that this offense can surprise people. And I think that Bilal Powell, at very least, is going to be a 50-50 timeshare back with Isaiah Crowell. And this is a dude that you can get pretty much every time in the 11th or 12th round. I think that in that vicinity, Bilal Powell is almost an auto pick.
John Brown, obviously, he has gotten a lot of buzz, and deservingly so, in Ravens camp.
Yeah, and the biggest thing for him is just that he stayed healthy. I mean, because we know that this dude can ball. In his second NFL season, he had over 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns. He has missed only one practice dating back to OTAs and minicamp. All the way through OTAs and minicamp, all the way into training camp, missed one practice due to a knee injury and then returned the very next day. Has not missed a single day of training camp. He has outplayed Michael Crabtree in camp, according to all reports. Targets in this offense are entirely up for grabs. They totally remade the receiver core, and Hayden Hurst suffered an injury, not going to be ready for week one. He looked like he was going to be playing a very big role in their passing game. So that clears up even more opportunity for John Brown. Lamar Jackson really never put pressure on Joe Flacco, who looked the best that he has in years. He's healthy after that back injury last season. And they're going to be willing to throw the ball more with Joe Flacco under center than they would be if they were, trying to run out Lamar Jackson, who just, he isn't ready. That's fine. I think he has gotten better throughout the preseason, had his best game at Miami last weekend, and won me a bunch of money in preseason DFS. So thanks, Lamar. But this is going to be Joe Flacco's offense, barring a face plant, barring an injury. And I think that that's actually good news for the members of the passing game, simply because their attempts are going to be more voluminous. Smokey's on a one-year, $5 million prove-it contract. He's got a lot on the line this year, and I think he's going to have a big year with Joe Flacco.
David Njoku, tight end, who's caught some balls for the Cleveland Browns this preseason.
Only played 47% of the Browns' offensive snaps last year. He's been on nearly 90% of the Browns' first-team snaps so far this preseason. Has looked dominant on the field. Was it the first year that we were doing the feast that it might have been the second year that we were talking about how Travis Kelce was just ready to elevate? We nicknamed him Zeus, and he took off that year, and, everything has – it's like he gets better every year. I think that David Njoku could be on the same sort of career path. You look at this, the Browns personnel in their 11 package with three receivers and one tight end. The upside on it is pretty strong, man. Josh Gordon outside, Jarvis Landry in the slot, and then Antonio Callaway is potentially the other outside receiver, or Rashard Higgins, who's had a very nice camp / preseason. Then David Njoku at tight end. They have a lot of potential. I think that Tyrod Taylor is actually going to be a sneaky streamer early in the season. Also has that very nice schedule that we referred to earlier regarding Carlos Hyde. I think that the Browns are going to be able to score some points early in the year, assuming that the coaching cooperates.
finally, Evan, you've got basically all of the Jags receivers.
Right, because Marquise Lee tore knee ligaments and is out for the season. So that elevates everyone on the depth chart. Dante Moncrief, Keelan Cole, D.D. Westbrook, and D.J. Chark. Dante Moncrief has played the most first-team snaps in the preseason. I think that we are going to see D.D. Westbrook as the Jaguars' primary slot receiver. He's kind of like a vertical slot receiver. Think of how like Victor Cruz was used in his prime. T.Y. Hilton has been used like that. D.D. Westbrook played 70% of his preseason snaps in the slot, and he's going to be playing in between Keelan Cole, who's the flanker, and Dante Moncrief, who is the X. My two favorite guys to target are D.D. Westbrook and Keelan Cole. And these guys are always available in the double-digit rounds. I'm not sure that these guys are going to be consistent. You know, it's going to be a receiver rotation. They're going to use the young deep threat, D.J. Chark. They're going to play four receivers. They did this a lot last year, and they're a run-first team. So consistency is probably going to be an issue. But I do like taking them in best ball, and I think that those two guys, D.D. Westbrook and Keelan Cole, they're going to provide some big games over the course of the season.
Let's get to the fallers now. We got through the risers. Now it's the other side of the equation. It's the fallers, and we'll start with Alshon Jeffrey in Philadelphia. Obviously going to be out at least the first 2 weeks, according to Chris Mortensen.
Yes, and that stinks. It's still a possibility that he begins the season on reserve PUP, although they're saying that won't happen. And maybe they'll keep him on the active roster. But, you know, last year we saw this with Andrew Luck. They didn't put him on the reserve PUP, and he still wasn't ready. And Alshon's dealing with a severe injury. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. I dumped him in my rankings. I mean, I had him wide receiver 25 at one point, and he's all the way down almost to wide receiver 40. I just want to put him in a place where I'm not getting him, and anyone using my rankings is not getting him, because I don't think it's worth it. He tore his rotator cuff. He's been busted for PEDs. One thing that I went back and looked at is guys who have been busted for PEDs and how the rest of their career trajectory went. And, man, it is bleak. I mean, these guys that get busted and try to come back, Alshon Jeffrey was actually one of the most successful ones last year because he got busted in 2016 with the Bears. But he had under 800 yards despite playing all 16 games. Just wasn't great. He did stay afloat because he scored 9 touchdowns. But it's not like he came back and had a big year. And he has not gone over 821 yards in a season since the 2014 campaign. So, you know, I think that we've probably seen the best of Alshon Jeffrey. We also think that Carson Wentz's touchdown rate, which was a league-high 7.5%, is going to drop this year. He's coming off a knee injury, and quarterbacks just are not able to sustain super high touchdown rates like that. That doesn't bode well for Alshon Jeffrey. The guys I'm targeting right now because of this are, number one, Nelson Agholor, who's been undervalued all offseason. Number two, Zach Ertz, who I've moved up to right behind Travis Kelce. I mean, Zach Ertz is going to dominate red zone work. I mean, he could get 10-plus targets a game for as long as Alshon Jeffrey is out. I mean, his floor and his ceiling are massive. I love Zach Ertz as a pick. I still see him go, like, mid-fourth round, late-fourth round, auto-pick there. And then Mike Wallace, a guy who, you know, people are not really talking about, but he can still stretch the field. He really can still run. Led the Ravens in receiving each of the last two seasons. He's going to play a bigger role with Alshon out.
Well, this makes me feel good because, some of my recent picks in our Fantasy Feast MFL 10 draft in the later rounds, he was the only Jags receiver left. I took Moncrief after the Marquise Lee injury. I took Mike Wallace. You know, just flyers on some guys a little bit later, you know, late in those drafts. What about Dalvin Cook? Why is he a faller?
I mean, there are just strong indications that this Vikings backfield is going to be a committee. You look at the history of John DeFilippo in both Cleveland and Philadelphia. He has run backfield committees. Dalvin Cook himself has called he and Latavius Murray a 1-2 punch. Latavius Murray's finished top five in the NFL in carries inside the five-yard line in back-to-back years. He's a guy that multiple coaching staffs have looked at and said, hey, we want to give this guy the ball when we're in a scoring position. You know, all he's got to do is fall forward. He's so, like, tall and thick. All he's got to do is fall forward, and he'll score. I went on Paul Allen, voice of the Vikings radio show, a couple weeks ago. He told me that he expects Latavius Murray to get the short yardage and goal line work over Dalvin Cook. And then, as we mentioned on the offensive line show, this Vikings offensive line does not really look prepared to be a dominant run-blocking unit. And so that's a concern as well for Dalvin Cook. I like Dalvin Cook. You know, I've taken him a little bit, but I think he's more of like a fringe second to third round pick than the fringe first rounder a lot of people have been treating him as.
Next up, we are going to keep it in the AFC. We're going to switch over to the AFC, but keep it at the running back position with LeSean McCoy.
Yeah, the off-field allegations against him have quieted down, but you know, it's still possible that pending further investigation, that could resurface as a concern for his playing time. It's something that, you know, we have to kind of keep in the backs of our minds. The Bills' offensive line has just looked atrocious, and we talked about this as well on the offensive line show. They just lost a ton of talent. In that third preseason game, they could not block a lick. Josh Allen bombed in the third preseason game. Looked pretty good in the Bills' first two games. Didn't look ready for prime time. And I understand that the offensive line was doing him no favors. Dude's got to get the ball out. You know, you have to get the ball out. Sacks really have been shown to be more of a quarterback statistic than an offensive line statistic. And Josh Allen he's got a lot to learn, man. I mean, he played in the WAC or the Mountain West, and I'm not sure that he's ready to play right now. If it won't be him, it'll be Nathan Peterman. That may be a better option right now for the state of their offensive line. They just have not put Josh Allen in position to succeed based on their blocking, based on their receiving unit. LeSean McCoy turned 30 in July, okay, and he is coming off a career-worst 3.9 yards per carry. He finished 32nd out of 47 running backs in Football Outsiders success rate. I think that he is better than those metrics indicate, but those are also objective metrics that I'm not just going to bat my eyes at that. You know, we're definitely going to bring it up as a concern, especially at his age. And recently, LeSean McCoy has been missing practices with a strained groin. And I don't like it when my players get injured already heading into the season. So there are a laundry list of red flags here on LeSean McCoy. I'm still willing to draft him, but it needs to be around that third, fourth turn as opposed to in the second or third round.
What about Jerick McKinnon in San Francisco?
Also has been injured. Calf strain cost Jerick McKinnon the second half of training camp. Caused the 49ers to sign Alfred Morris, who, you know, Alfred Morris is the best outside zone runner on the team. And he knows the offense, you know, after playing under Kyle Shanahan in Washington, I'm expecting this to become a committee. I think that, you know, you look at what happened with the Vikings backfield last year, I think that Alfred Morris will be like the Latavius Murray, and Jerick McKinnon will fall into that that role, that, you know, a similar role to what he played last season. That doesn't mean that Jerick McKinnon is going to have no value. He's definitely going to have value, but he's not a guy that I'm trying to take in the top four rounds, and he still goes there consistently despite having significant concerns for his usage and already having an injury. And, you know, these are situations that over the course of time, if you avoid these situations, you're going to put yourself in a much better spot. I mean, sometimes you'll get them wrong, but by and large, you're going to get them right when you're avoiding severe red flag players like this.
What about Ronald Jones in Tampa?
lost the camp battle to Peyton Barber, and it really was never even close. There were also times during the preseason when Ronald Jones even ran behind Jacquizz Rodgers. And I think that at this point, you know, the Bucs lost Charles Sims. Ronald Jones is definitely not a candidate to take over the work that Charles Sims left behind, because he doesn't catch the ball and he doesn't pass protect. Jacquizz Rodgers is the favorite to take over that third down role with Peyton Barber in the first and second down role. And what that makes Ronald Jones is a situational change of pace early down back. And those guys don't score many fantasy points. I thought that Ronald Jones was overdrafted coming out of USC. He's a track athlete at USC. Reminded me of like a poor man's Tevin Coleman, straight line speedster, ran into the backs of his blockers a lot, not really elusive. And at this point, he belongs in the double-digit rounds of drafts. People should not be thinking that they're getting some sort of a steal just because this guy was a fifth or sixth round pick a few weeks ago. And now, you know, taking him in the seventh or eighth, he needs to be going in the double-digit rounds or you don't take him at all.
What about Rashad Penny in Seattle, another high pick?
Yeah, got beaten out by Chris Carson, who had a really big preseason. I mean, I think Chris Carson looks like a spitting image of DeMarco Murray. DeMarco Murray, even in his prime, he can play in the passing game. He runs with a lot of force and power. He's a run finisher. Rashad Penny, after getting beaten out by Chris Carson, had surgery for a broken finger. His weaknesses coming out of San Diego State were in the passing game, pass protection and receiving. And, you know, recovering from that injury on his hand prevented him from getting valuable reps to improve in those areas. He also gained 16 pounds since the combine. Like, this doesn't work. You know, adding weight at the running back position in particular does not work. He went from 220 to 236. That's not something that I want to see from my running back. And I think at best, Rashad Penny is going to be a committee back, sharing time with Chris Carson and maybe even CJ Procise, who they've started to get a little bit more higher on recently. He's going to make the team. At best, a committee back behind a bad offensive line, not a situation that you really want to invest very much in. You know, we had so many rookie running back hits last season: Kareem Hunt, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Leonard Fournette. I mean, there were so many hits that I wonder if we got a little greedy, because the rookie running backs this year, they have not gone according to plan. You know, even up at the top, Saquon Barkley missing so much training camp time with a hamstring injury, and then Rashad Penny and Ronald Jones not even winning starting jobs.
Randall Cobb has also kind of been in the news as well.
Yeah, you know, they're rookie wide receivers. The Packers, they drafted three of them, okay? Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Equanimeous St. Brown, and Jamon Moore. And they've all had pretty big moments in the preseason. Valdez-Scantling in particular. Equanimeous St. Brown, the Packers have been using as a big slot receiver, which I found very interesting, almost like preparing for the exit of Randall Cobb. And that's what I'm worried about. You know, there have been reports that Randall Cobb is on the trade block, but, you know, no one's going to trade for an injury-riddled slot receiver with an $8.5 million salary. I don't think he has any kind of a trade market. And so what does that tell you if they are shopping him, that his release may be forthcoming? And if Randall Cobb were to be detached from Aaron Rodgers, I mean, you know, his value would just be shot. He'd have to learn a new offense. He'd almost certainly be playing with a worse quarterback. And then if he stays in Green Bay, you know, he probably loses playing time to the rookies and Geronimo Allison, and he plays behind two red zone dominators in Devontae Adams and Jimmy Graham, who are just going to score, you know, hog touchdowns and hog red zone targets. So at this point, I think that Randall Cobb, his floor is too low and his ceiling is too low for him to be someone that I'm really even considering. He's a guy that I dumped way down my fantasy rankings.
Next up, you have Devontae Parker. Wow. Miami Dolphins receiver.
Yeah, I think it just might be over for Devontae Parker in Miami. He's going to have to go somewhere else. You know, maybe one of these guys who needs a change of scenery. I took him out of my top 150 altogether. He's DND, do not draft, even before suffering this injury. I mean, the dude hasn't even been cleared to catch passes yet. He suffered this injury to his hand, and he was already in danger of losing playing time to Albert Wilson, who they invested $8 million a year into. Adam Gase is not committed to Devontae Parker being ready for week one, and the beat writers have suggested that Devontae Parker could be shopped for cornerback help where Miami is weak. So that look is pretty bleak right now for Devontae Parker. Do not draft.
Calvin Ridley in Atlanta, why is he a faller?
Well, he, you know, I think that there, you know, he's a first round pick, and so I don't think it was crazy to suggest that he could like overtake Mohamed Sanu for the Falcons' number two receiver job, but he has barely even been able to secure the number three receiver job so far. He is ran behind Justin Hardy so far in the preseason, and even Reggie Davis, like a practice squad type receiver. So has not carved out a surefire role. I'm still very optimistic about Calvin Ridley in the long term, and I think he was a very good pick by the Falcons from a real life standpoint. But it doesn't look like he's going to be making much fantasy noise. You know, where, how do we even carve out targets for him? He's behind Julio. He's behind Sanu. You know, Austin Hooper is still a factor there. And then they have two pass catch, you know, running backs who can are definitely serviceable at worst in the passing game. So, you know, he's going to need multiple injuries, you know, certainly one to Julio Jones to become any kind of a fantasy factor. And I went back recently, I looked at, you know, we had that awesome 2014 wide receiver draft with Mike Evans, Odell Beckham, you know, Allen Robinson, you know, the list went on and on. Since then, first round rookie receivers have been bad. I mean, brutal. 13 wide receivers drafted in the first round over the last 3 years. Only two have gotten to 500 yards as rookies. Only one has gotten to 700 yards as a rookie. I mean, we need more than 700 yards for our guys to be, you know, big-time fantasy players, for sure. And that's a 1 out of 13 hit rate. It's a small sample size. It's not necessarily indicative of what is going to happen in the future. But it's something that I wanted to point out. And I think that Calvin Ridley is probably going to be the next one to struggle to get 700 yards.
Lastly, Cam Meredith, who's just got the injury bug.
Yeah, he's changing teams, coming off a major knee injury. He missed about 2 weeks of training camp with an undisclosed injury. I'm not sure that it was related to the knee, but still, you know, changing teams, these wide receivers that change teams, their hit rates are lower. I mean, there are every single year lots of examples of wide receivers that change teams and do not succeed in their first year on those teams. Perhaps more concerning than anything has been the emergence of Tre'Quan Smith, the Saints' rookie receiver out of UCF. He has been awesome. I mean, the Saints beat writers were talking about him, you know, going back to OTAs and minicamp, just ripping up practice, and he has been awesome in the preseason. I think that they're really going to struggle to keep him off the field. I think that we will see him out there for at least 15 snaps in week one alongside Ted Ginn and Michael Thomas. And it was concerning to me that Cameron Meredith in that third preseason game was out there in the fourth quarter, out there at, like, operating as a run blocker, did not catch a pass from Drew Brees all preseason. He has fallen to the point where I'm not looking to draft him. I think that it's going to be Michael Thomas at the top, and then Alvin Kamara as, you know, the second guy in line for targets. And it's going to be, you know, Ben Watson, Tre'Quan Smith, Cam Meredith, Ted Ginn competing for the other targets in that offense. Not going to lead to a whole lot of fantasy production.
Love it, Evan. Outstanding job. Speaking of outstanding, I don't know, have you heard about what DraftKings is doing for week one? It's pretty cool. I mean, people already know that DraftKings.com is the leader in one-week fantasy sports. You choose when to play. No season-long commitment. Just pick your players. Stay under the cap. People know most of that stuff by now. If you haven't given it a shot, you should. But how about this? To celebrate week one, DraftKings is hosting a free team pick'em promo. Download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use code FEAST. All you have to do is pick at least half of the winning teams correctly, and you'll win a share of $1 million. So as long as you get at least half the winning teams for week one right, you get money back. You guys can do this. It's code FEAST only at DraftKings. Again, code FEAST at DraftKings.com. FEAST, that's the code. The game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/pick'em. For details. Let's get the one email here, Evan.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
Thanks for the podcast, guys. This comes from Ben in Wisconsin. Ross with the energy, positive attitude, and Evan with the fire takes advice. Love it. Keep it short as possible. Need 12-team PPR. That was last week, right? Yep, that was last week. So, I forgot to delete that one. All right, this is William Moyer. I am two drafts into the 2018 fantasy season. I had an observation. I tend to always gravitate to the same players. And I was wondering, as a fantasy pro, do you intentionally draft the same players on your team? I understand that not all teams can be 100% alike, but since it is a possibility... do you intentionally stay away from players you draft in other leagues? Otherwise, if you aren't doing well in one league, you probably aren't doing well in all of them. But then on the flip side, if it is a winning team, you might be winning in a good majority of the leagues. Just a strategy question I was thought was an interesting one to think about from William Moyer. So, Evan, I think you've touched on this before. You are in a million leagues. Do you diversify, or do you just keep hitting what you believe?
Yeah, I'm going to end up doing like 800 drafts. And the way that I'm able to do that is because I do a lot of fast drafts on play draft. All in total with all my redraft leagues and all my best ball leagues, I'm going to end up doing like 800. So it's easy for me to say that, hey, every week, you know, I reset my rankings and I wind up with different guys. You know, that's the way that I'm able to diversify, as I reset every time, you know, just reevaluating situations, adjusting for injury. And so that's the way I end up diversifying. But for someone who, hey, you know, you've only done two drafts, which is normal, it's probably even above average in terms of volume. Most people just do one draft. You know, you're going to end up doing, I don't know, I would guess like maybe three or four more. You know, I don't really know, because I'm not, you know, really doing that myself. I'm not doing that small number of drafts. I wouldn't have any problem with gravitating toward the same guys, though, when you're doing low volume drafting, because there's a reason that, you know, that those are the guys that you like in the first place. It's because you're using your logic, you're using, you know, projections, you know, using your intuition, you're using all the observations that you make during the preseason and, you know, listening to the coaches and just taking in all the information. There's a reason that you like those guys. It's because you believe in them. And I think it's fine to gravitate toward those guys. I don't think that when you're doing low volume drafting, you necessarily have to diversify from team to team, because then you may be putting yourself in suboptimal situations that you don't really believe in, that you don't have as much evidence for, simply on the basis of diversifying. So I would stick with the same guys, man.
Speaking of knowing, Evan, which guys to stick with or not, SquadQL is an awesome, awesome app that you guys need to download and check out. It actually recommends the best starting lineup for you each week, based on your starters, bench players, the free agent pool. It's crazy. So the app connects directly with your Yahoo, ESPN, CBS League, wherever you guys are playing, pulling in your actual roster and your league scoring system. SquadQL also provides waiver and trade recommendations, plus the app gives you player rankings each week, and it's all based on your league's settings. SquadQL is your go-to app this fantasy season. These are the same dudes that invented RotoQL that over 100,000 DFS dudes use to optimize their daily fantasy lineup. You can also download RotoQL for free for both Apple and Android. That'll do it for the preseason next week, baby. Evan, it is week one. You guys know what we do. We go through every matchup, and Evan gives you the fantasy relevant note on basically every player. So any player on your team, Evan will give you some context. It's not just a ranking. It's what you should know before you make the decision of who to play and who to sit in week one and week two and all the way through. That is why we are here, my friends. Make sure you're already subscribed to the podcast. We also will have some pretty darn cool giveaways next week that I know you'll be excited about if you're into a little thing called Madden. Little hint right there. We also have lots of ways that you can contribute to the show, the sponsor confirmations, the Apple podcast rankings, et cetera, et cetera. Get excited, baby. It is go time. I'm stuffed. We're done.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.